This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Blaze Radio Network.
And now, the Rabbi Daniel Appin Show.
The more the world changes, the more we find comfort in the things that never change. This is Rabbi Daniel Appin, on demand, on the Blaze Radio Network.
Welcome, happy warriors. Welcome to the Rabbi Daniel Appin Show, where I, your rabbi, and his wife reveal how the world
really. How is that? Is that good?
That's very works. Good. Yeah, I mean, considering you haven't had a lot of practice.
No,
on
thank
it,
you for letting me.
This is what
sit in on your podcast this
couldn't,
week. Visit.
Couldn't manage without you, because today we want to talk about the holistic you, and the holistic you is written by Rabbi Daniel and Susan Lappin. So we are going to have a chance to talk about that a little bit. And before we go much further, you know that little button that lets you subscribe to the podcast? Now would be a fabulous time to hit that and join the podcast.
And then you always will know when a new one is coming out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's there's no, as far as I know, there's no downside to it at all. So please do subscribe, and it goes without saying that it helps us. Obviously, subscription numbers climbing is a very good sign for a podcast. So that would be a great thing. And also be aware that anybody who's a part of this show is a happy warrior. And if you tell other people about the show and you expand the show that way, you're a fantastic happy warrior. But if you actually want to join the community of happy warriors, well, you do that at rabbidaniellappin.com. So be aware of that. Okay, so here's the starting point. And Susan and I think it's fair to say we struggled on this book.
That would be a fair statement.
It was hard.
it was a
hard book to write. We haven't prepared the show. We're just going to talk about it and see where we arrive. But why do you think it was so hard to write?
Well, I think like many books, we had a vision, and bringing that vision down to reality. It's very much the case of starting a business or starting a marriage or anything else. Your vision is pure, and your vision, everything in your vision of what you want it to be is huge. And then all of a sudden, when you have to bring it to reality, it has to fit into real parameters.
Right.
And the whole idea of the holistic you, which is integrating your family, fitness, faith, friendships, and finances, is huge. I mean, we're basically talking about
life.
The entirety of life. And so, okay, well, we'll just do this in 200 or 300 pages. No problem. Wasn't so simple.
Yeah, that's part of it. Yeah, the other part is that I find it easiest to have a fairly good outline of the book, even before we start writing it. And I always assumed that the outline would operate as follows. As Susan just said, we've identified the five areas of life where if things are going well for you, you really have no complaints, right? So finance, friendship, family, fitness, and faith. So in other words, if you have a great intimate life, family, connections, spouse, whatever it is, all of those, if that part of your life is in great shape, and you've got a terrific social life, you've got friends, and that's wonderful, and you don't have too much in the way of financial worries. So now we've covered family, finance, and friendship. If you're in pretty good health, that's fitness. And if you're okay with the boss, you're okay with God, well, you've got nothing to complain about. Life is good. And so those are really the five areas. And And we made it the five F's just to make it easily memorable and to sort of give it an identity, as it were. And so, you know, if you think about it, what we're talking about is how these five F's all interact with one another. And so if you've got, shall we say, five things, let's call them A, B, C, D, E, the five things. And then you talk about the interconnections, you've got A, B, A, C, A, D, and A, E. Those are the first group of connections. Then you've got B, but you don't have to say B, A, because we already did A, B, and that connection's the same thing. But you've got B, C, B, D, B, and E. Anyway, if you play around with this, you'll see you have 10 connections. I thought, great, simple, 10 chapters, and for reasons we don't have to go into now, but we can tell you about it. That didn't work. And so a great deal of time went on a dead end, an outline that simply didn't work. And that was just really frustrating and challenging and difficult, because we knew we were handing over something of inestimable value. But we got it done. And we're happy.
And we weren't looking to do a technical book. This wasn't an academic piece of work.
Right.
We wanted a book that was really useful to people, that would be enjoyable to read, readable, and useful.
Exactly.
We weren't looking for something that was going to be in a sociology class, you know, a textbook that people would be forced to buy.
Yeah, exactly. That was the, an academic book or an intellectual book. No, we're not looking. We're looking for this to be useful to you wherever you live, in whatever country you are, whether you are a man or a woman, this, wherever you are in life even, you know. Obviously, people who are young enough to still make changes and to shape the direction in which their life is going are obviously in a different situation from a middle-aged person who has fewer options. But there are still things that can be done differently from the way you're doing them to improve your life. And coupled with that is the reality that although young people at the beginning of their lives, I mean, ideally, you know, and you only have to think of the things you wish you knew when you were 18 or 19 or 22. But the trouble is, and I know this is true for me, I don't know how I could have been taught these things in a way that I really would have accepted them and understood them. So on the one hand, youth is very beneficial, but on the other hand, the drawback of youth is that you don't...
A little hubris, a little arrogance. You're not always able to... You don't have the maturity. The maturity to be able to understand
on,
things
on every level. I mean, you know, there are young people who say, you know, I'm still a teenager. What do I have to worry about my career? Why should I worry about making money now? I'm in university. I'm here to have fun. I don't have to worry about making money now. Some really bad decisions, but you know, later on you've got to correct them. I know, and we both know, of girls who assume, again, we don't have to worry about marriage. I'm young. I'm not worrying about marriage. Now I'm worrying about fun or career or whatever it is that interests you. But these girls assumed that marriage would just sort of happen, like puberty happened. You know, marriage will come along. Family will come along. It never occurred to them. You know, and we're talking now early 2024. What we're saying now would have been incomprehensible if somebody would have been saying this in 1960, shall we say?
Not 60, but maybe 40.
You want to go back that far?
I do.
Wow.
But I think also, and you know, when funnily enough, we used to speak about four F's: the faith, finances, family, and friendship. And it was actually feedback from our happy warriors that made us add fitness. And I think that may be, on one hand, it's the simplest. I mean, okay, I may, you know, maybe there's lots of ideas of how to form a family and lots of ways you have friendships and lots of ways that people handle finances. But fitness should be pretty straightforward. To me, that was one of the biggest surprises, because there's no grapefruit diet in here. We're not giving you advice. We're not telling you, here's how many minutes a day you should work out. And if we needed to start with an F. But really, it was the entire physical side of the world. It was not eating as in how many calories should you ingest and how much of that should be protein versus how much should that be carbohydrate and fat. It was that there's an element of food and eating that affects family, that affects friendship. It's a wonderful way to make friends is to sit down and eat with somebody.
Yes.
It affects, it's faith. Do you recognize the blessing of the food? When you look at, the array of vegetables and fruits, if you're fortunate enough to live in an area where when you walk into a supermarket, it strikes you. And during COVID, for the first time, for many Americans at least, it was the first time many people walked into a supermarket and did not see this.
Do you remember when were the very first time you saw a supermarket that didn't have stuff in it
that wasn't packed full? We went to the Caribbean.
Yes,
and we walked,
that's right. And we went sailing.
We went sailing in the Caribbean, and you know, you have your list, and we keep kosher, which means that we can't eat everything that's there. But fruits and vegetables we can eat, and we walked into a supermarket and it was like, oh, like maybe I'm not going to be able to get carrots? Never dawned on me that I would not get carrots if I wanted them.
And we know, you know, as a result of more recent sailing trips, that it's improved there as well.
Yes.
It's not like it was. This is...
But COVID for many people was the first time in America that people saw empty shelves things. But that when you do walk and you see that array, that can be, if we pay attention to it, a spiritual moment of gratitude to God. That, you know, food could be blah, so we can get our vitamins, but instead we have colors and smells and textures. It's an amazing thing. So fitness isn't saying here's how you should take care of your body. It's talking really about that intersection of how our physical beings, which is how we, there's even, you know, there's a whole thing on bathroom usage, but eating, sexuality, all those physical things fall under the rubric of fitness,
and
they intersect with everything else.
When we speak about faith, a connection with God is part of that, but particularly for people who aren't sure yet where they stand with God, faith also covers everything that is not measurable in a laboratory. It covers everything in the intangible realm. It covers things that are, you know, like loyalty, integrity, gratitude, all kinds of important parts of life, but they have no way of being measured scientifically. And so, not surprisingly, we have areas of psychosomatic disorder, right? And this is a well-known phenomenon that people can have something disturbing them mentally, which manifests itself physically.
Also, that just as there are physical allergies, right? If somebody's coming over, we don't have a cat, but if we did have a cat and we knew somebody had a cat allergy, that would be something we'd have to take into account before inviting them. Our demeanors, people can be allergic to our demeanors as well. I'm sure you know people as we do who talk in a down, how are you today? Oh, okay. That's an allergy. You can be allergic to those type of people. And you know what? You stay away from them. Just the way I would stay away from cats if I was allergic to them. I want to stay away. Those are not going to be the people I choose for my friends. Because when you hang around people who are always angry or always complaining or always, it affects you. And so that's another physical fitness, what we call fitness and faith.
In the holistic you, we're teaching you to be, to know yourself and to realize that you can actually control things like your happiness. And that happiness is an attraction. It's a magnet. And that, as Susan was just saying, you may unbeknowingly be deterring people from desiring to connect with you.
Which also affects your finances, obviously. That's the whole point. It affects prospects.
It affects
your family life. It affects your friendship, finances, and your health. Because, of course, loneliness, being alone, is one of the worst things physically for your body you can do. And I actually think they did a fantastic job on the cover, don't you?
The holistic
because
you, yes.
Well, we wanted to present that there's you in the middle, and that each of these... there are no lines linking them to each other because they're linked to all, whether they're right next to each other or not. It's sort of almost a kaleidoscope where you could pivot the lens and you would see it in a different way. So I think I really like what they did with the cover on the
book.
Yeah,
they're very good. The publishers, John Wiley is a great publisher. And they did do well with this. Early on, before we went on air, you spoke about Dr. Lewis Thomas of the Sloan Kettering Cancer Institute in New York, who did a lot of work on placebos and writes about placebos. And he also writes about placebo studies in Massachusetts General Hospital. And again, there you got it as well, where what you believe, what is inside your soul, actually impacts what your body does. And so we're doing a lot of exposure on that, because it's really, really important for you to understand in your own life.
One of my favorite things you talk about, which when he was at Massachusetts General, I believe, was the warts, where he speaks about people being hypnotized to get rid of warts. And they were told, they were hypnotized to get rid of warts on the right side of their body. And lo and behold, so you had hands, let's say, I think it was hands. You had the warts actually on many, many of the people disappeared on the right side. And then you had one person whose warts disappeared on his left hand. And it didn't take that much research to understand that it was a person who confused right and left. They just didn't know their right from their left. But that's a fascinating thing. And we know it. We know it. You know, we accept these things. There are many things we accept in their category. And I think the whole idea of this book was take it outside the category. So, for example, when a football team, and you're going to, if I probably speak, I'm probably going to reveal that I'm not a football fan. But when the team huddles
You're not a football fan because you've never learned the game.
No, I haven't learned the game because I'm not a football. I didn't want, I have no interest.
All right.
The one game I went to, I was not excited, even with someone trying to explain to me what was going on. But that when you huddle before the game, and everybody gives a big shout of, you know, and the coach gives a speech. We accept that we know that, right? We know that if another team had a coach who just said, hey, guys, do your best, and everybody walked out, that team's going to be at a disadvantage, no matter how much. They may have both practiced the same amount of time. And we probably, a lot of people have read business books that say, put affirmations on your mirror before you head out to the workday. Those work, which is really strange, isn't it? If you think about it, if you think only of, you know, things in a very materialistic sense, it's very hard to understand, but they do. And what you believe, and it's not enough. It's not all you have to do. It's not going to be the only thing, but what you believe actually affects who you are and what you can achieve.
Right. The idea literally is to give you the inside information, the true information about how you work. And this is an insight into your complete operating system. And fundamental to that is understanding that your life is a system. And it works best. Your life is happiest and most fulfilling. It's a good life when all parts of the system are working and integrated with one another correctly.
I was just going to say, so for a younger person, so you can't do everything at the same time. And we're not suggesting that you set a timer within an hour, you divide your 60 minutes into five parts and you say, so I'm going to go A and then B and then C and then D and then E. That's not what we're saying. You talked earlier about a younger man, let's say, wanting to set up a business. Well, there is a good time. That is a very good idea. It's a very good idea to have a financial picture and some accomplishment before you get married. That would certainly be the advice of ancient Jewish wisdom. However,
I mean, just at its most basic, it goes far, far deeper than this, as we explain in the book. But the quality of woman who will be drawn to you has a lot to do with your accomplishments. You know, I'm talking now to 18-year-old guys, 17-year-old guys.
So we're not suggesting that an 18-year-old guy says, okay, so I should be thinking about how I'm going to contribute to the world and how I'm going to make my money, and I should also be looking for a wife. No, maybe not yet, but how you behave when you have in mind the future wife and family you want should be in your mind as you're focused on setting up your finances, because it's wrong. It's a mistake to say, well, I can just have fun right now. I can behave however I want because I'm not looking to women to get married to one. It should be in your mind already. In the future, I want a healthy marriage and I want a healthy family. And so, yes, how I behave at 17 and 18 in that area of sexuality, of romance, will affect what I'm able to do when I am ready.
Whether you're man or woman.
That's, yes.
Yeah, to be aware that you will most likely want to have a family. Most likely. I remember a doctor once said to me something very insightful, and it's applicable over here. I don't know if I ever told you even, but it's a while back. He said to me, Rabbi Lappin, I know what's going on in your head. I'm telling you these things that I think you should be doing, and I know what's going on. You're thinking to yourself that you're different. And he said, and you are. Everybody is different. Everyone is unique. But I want you to focus on the ways in which you are exactly like most other people. You know, and that was really good.
Did you listen?
Yes, I did. I did. He said, you know, there are things that apply statistically to the overwhelming majority of men, you know, in your age category or whatever. And so be aware that you're part of that cohort, whether you like it or not.
I think we actually spend a fair bit of time talking in this book about the fact that we have this dichotomy, which is that God created each human being as a unique being.
Right.
And different from everyone else. And that actuarial science is a real science, that there are ways in which most of us are going to. And if you and all your friends think that you're the exception to the rule, you're wrong. Because by definition, you can't be. Sometimes there is truly each of us has something very unique. And sometimes that does mean that we do something differently than most. But if you rely on that and you're not able to back it up and other people aren't able to say, you know what, you're different in this way, then you're probably fooling yourself. And one of the things we quote in this book is so many of the studies that have come out of loneliness now, and to the point that Japan and England and the United States of America are all establishing commissions to try to combat loneliness. And that's partially because there was an ignoring. We told people for such a long time, you know, your work is what matters, your career, that is the prime. If we did it here, that would be a big bulge.
That's a good point. Yes, we have made work and career disproportionately large.
Yes,
paradoxically, at a time where at no point in history have ordinary people lived as luxuriously and as comfortably as we do today.
But I think we're also feeling the kickback here that because we ignored faith and fitness and family and friendship, we're seeing that the economy is suffering because of that.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, on the most simple level, an economy that doesn't have people coming after it, that a population that's shrinking, finances are going to go.
It's a huge problem.
Awry.
The Scientific American, by the way, on that topic, did the most preposterous article on saying, well, yes, everyone says that declining fertility rates, declining population are bad for the economy, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. Think of how much better it is for the planet for there to be fewer people. And that will probably result in more financial opportunity as well, because there are fewer people vying for the same resources. What an unbelievable failure of understanding. Yeah. I thought that may be worth talking about separately, but it's a remarkable Scientific American article that totally, I mean, it's just plain wrong, but it's, anyway, it's probably slightly off topic.
So what would you say are the most controversial things we say or topics that we raise in this book?
Yeah, I think everybody is going to, immediately, I'm just paging through it and looking at the table of contents. I think people will first go to chapter 6, sex, pleasure, and pain.
Yeah, that's always an eye catcher.
So I mean, I think that's a part of
but
it.
But what that may be, so that may be the what catches the eye. But
yes,
I think we actually say things that people will struggle with, which is good because, as you always say, you don't want to massage people with warm butter.
Absolutely,
they can do
waste
that
of
themselves.
Time. Waste of time conjures up a unpleasant word picture.
But okay, well, you say it. I've definitely heard you say it.
I know. I say all the time, my job here is not to massage you with warm butter. Yes.
So, for example, we discuss the fact that we get two competing messages in modern society. One is that, so for example, in the workforce, well, now with the point that you should prefer X, Y, or Z, we're into, you know, DEI, and you should pick people not by skills. But go back a few years when there, at least there was the idea of a meritocracy, and we were told, well, women and men are exactly the same. When they come for a job interview or you're looking for somebody, it's irrelevant if in very few cases if it's a man or a woman. And at the same time, we're told, well, wait a second, you have to have sensitivity, and there's, you know, you have to be aware that women and men are different and that maybe things that you said if in an all-male workforce aren't okay. Well, those contradict each other, actually. It's hard. It's difficult. So we have an entire section about platonic friendships in the workforce. And I think a lot of people will have trouble with that. Yeah. We have, this is probably to me maybe the most controversial, that earning money means something different to a man than it means to a woman.
Oh, good.
Again,
that's
in 99.9% of the cases. And if you and all your friends say, well, I'm that 0.01%, 0.01%, you can't be, because that earning money means something different. Now, that doesn't mean that women cannot earn money. It doesn't mean women should not earn money.
Or don't want to earn money.
Or don't want to earn money. Yeah. It means that there should be an awareness that
it means
it's
something
different.
Yeah.
And
I think... Or put another way, a man who's not making any money looks completely different to a woman from a man who is making money.
And again,
and
I think
the other way around, women who are not making money do not look worse to a man than a woman who is making money.
So I'm going to say that in the this is another thing we do, that in the short term, and a lot of times what's popular, what's faddish, right now polyamory, it's really funny. It's as if people, I mean, I think this is how it works actually, because all of a sudden there's an article and I guess it gets eyeballs. And
no,
it gets eyeballs in the Times.
Susan. Financial Times, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Atlantic, National
Right,
Public
Radio. They all have
Radio.
The same news.
Yeah, let me take that. We need to look at it, but I thought that that's a good intro to something very fundamental in this book, which is incredibly useful. And once you have wrapped yourself around this idea, you really will benefit from it. And that is that there are two categories of information that you need for successful living. One of them is a scientific category of information, and the other is, for lack of a better term, I call it a spiritual. That doesn't mean it has anything to do with God or religion or heaven or piety. It means the opposite of scientific.
And actually,
scientific is measurable. Spiritual is non-measurable by anything other than a human being.
Oh, I was going to say, when we use the word faith, it was because it starts with an F, and spiritual doesn't start with an F.
Right.
And also,
yeah,
some people, spiritual, maybe it's crystals, or maybe like it's one of these words that's sort of become very loosey-goosey.
Yes.
So we used faith, but really, in many ways, spiritual is a more accurate, as in non-physical,
non-physical. That's really one of the difficulties of laying out the book. But anyway, that's what faith means. So, in the area of scientific, for instance, are electric cars and electric airplanes a good idea? And in order to answer that, you need to probe your understanding of chemistry, to understand the mechanism of storing electricity in a battery. You need to understand physics, to understand electric motors. You need to understand the first law of thermodynamics, which explains that energy can't come from nowhere. Energy always comes from somewhere. And so that explains why you can't, for instance, keep filling up your battery in your car by generating electricity from the turning wheels. We do that when the car is braking. It's called regenerative braking. But you can't do it all the time because that would violate the first law of thermodynamics. Can't be done. So these all, at no point can anybody in this discussion say, well, wait a second, my belief system would have batteries operating differently. The fact is, here's why batteries are really a poor propulsion force for airplanes. Here is the problem. Somebody, well, you know, I'm a Buddhist, so I'm not sure I... No, it's irrelevant. There is nothing spiritual about this. This is all straightforward, scientific. It has nothing to do with your opinion. It has nothing to do with your beliefs. It has nothing to do with your mood and your emotions. It's very straightforward and scientific. And in exactly the same way, there are other questions, all right? We've looked at the question of whether electrical cars or electrical airplanes are good. How's about the topic Susan brought up? Is polyamory good? Okay, now, I even saw in some of these articles, and the New York Times has had more than one on this, it's really very interesting, but I even saw in one of the articles, somebody saying, well, we rely on science for everything, so let's depend on science for finding out whether polyamory is a new and viable way of organizing human society. Polyamory means a family unit of more than one husband and more than one wife, or alternatively, a couple in an open marriage where both have relationships with other people outside of the marriage. That is also apparently part of what polyamory means. I'm not an expert, but this is what they're talking about. Now, is science useful on this? Science here is about as useful as religion is on determining whether electrical airplanes are a good idea. It has nothing to do with it. And, there have been attempts over the last few decades. This really didn't start until the 20th century, pretty much. But that is the idea of psychology and psychiatry being sciences. They're not sciences. I'm sorry. With due deference and respect to my friends who are psychologists and who are psychiatrists, it isn't a science. You might pretend it is by making lists and documenting it and putting it down on spreadsheets, but in the final analysis, there is no way that, shall we say, a patient has, shall we say, shingles, and 3 out of 5 doctors will disagree about. No, the observation of the symptoms of shingles are very simple and very straightforward, and everybody agrees on what they are. That's not the same when it comes to so-called mental disorder. And there is no objective way of determining mental disorder. Yeah, we look it up in the DSM-5, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual.
That is different than the DSM-3. And it's...
Yes, exactly. And even then, it depends on the interpretation of the practitioner. So the idea then is that we're recognizing that you have to take into account some of the spiritual factors. In words, not everything is scientific. If everything was scientific, none of us would wear clothing with designer labels. We wouldn't, because the whole fashion industry satisfies a spiritual yearning, not a physical yearning. The physical yearning is very simple: protection from the weather, maintaining body temperature, and at a push, although that blends far into the spiritual arena, one might say preservation of dignity. Although nudists do try and do away with that, to suggest that if we just accustom people to being nude, it's, you know, as long as they're warm and not losing body heat, there's no problem. Well, it turns out there is a problem.
I just feel... Sorry, I'm trying to find a segue and I'm not, because I really just want to suggest, I really do think people need this book or should read this book. It's The Holistic You, Integrating Your Family, Finances, Faith, Friendship, and Fitness. It's available in all those places where you get books, and it's also available on rabbidaniellappin.com, and it even has an accompanying workbook. But the idea, where I was coming with polyamory, is that certain ideas get into society, and then all of a sudden, you know, once you know this is going to be on the cover, the lead story in every newspaper, and many newspapers and many magazines, it's going to become a class in university. It's going to become a topic of discussion, and you can get caught in a bad time in history where a bad idea
catches on.
And so a lot of what the purpose of this book is, what we're hoping to do, is to let people get a healthy sense of themselves, of skepticism, to not be so susceptible to just, well, everybody's saying it.
Yeah.
And to...
This basically is a book of your independence.
That's a very good way of putting it. I like that.
It makes you independent, because we've all become susceptible to expertitis, which is a terrible disease, which is subduing your own instincts, subduing your own knowledge, subduing your own experience in the face of what the experts say. And so we encourage a very healthy skepticism towards that, and depending far more on your instincts, on your knowledge, on your skills, on your experience.
Well, I'm going to push back a little bit on the instincts.
I know, because just I think where you're going, yes.
If you're, you know, when you're raised in a society, your instincts get shaped by that society.
Yes, that's right.
And so it's having the right instincts. It's really tuning into
But talk about mothers, for instance, who totally abandon any conviction that they can even teach their child to read, right?
Most mothers have had their instincts deadened by the education that they've received.
Speak to that for a second.
Just our history a little bit. I homeschooled for about 16 years, our children. And when I started, it's going to make me sound very old, but homeschooling was not a commonly known word. It was not something that there were lots of articles.
Not that old. I mean, it really changed very quickly.
Okay. And it was very fascinating to me, you know, that I was perfectly capable of teaching my children to read and to do math. And yet the California schools, for example, went from top literacy for years and years and years to low literacy rates, graduates of California public schools, because they were insisting on using a method of education to teach reading that was the latest, the greatest, happened to also sell books because it was new and exciting, and it was a failure.
It did something else, Susan. It's a whole language reading.
The whole language reading.
It did something else, and that is it protected the esotericism. It conferred rank and status.
This is a sign that I had to go to school for 4 years to learn how to teach your child to read. How silly can you be to think that you can teach your child to read?
And they discouraged parents from teaching their children to read.
So they've now they've revoked that, actually. But if your child was in school during those years, your child was damaged.
Seriously damaged.
Because
California?
Yeah. And so when you talk about a mother's instincts, I think many women, and I see this. Look, first of all, money speaks. When something is business, and yes, I am trying to get your money to buy the book, so take that into account also. But I think, you know, we're saying look it up, and you've been listening probably to my husband for a while. If you think there's something valuable, then it's worthwhile money. But what happened was that a mother today, a young mother, is bombarded with thousands of dollars of things they need to keep their child safe, to keep their child's mental processes functioning at their best. And somehow mothers and children ended up perfectly bright when they were literally had a cornhusk doll, and you know, that was the extent of their toys. They were safe, and they ended up perfectly intelligent.
I don't know if baby Einstein is still on the market.
That was a joke.
No.
But people spent a lot of money on it.
People spent money believing that their children would be handicapped if they didn't play them these audio CDs, or maybe they were
sit with videos to watch them.
Or videos to watch. This is a long time ago.
Which, of course, is damaging to a baby to watch videos. So I guess I'm saying is, what this is all came because I'm pushing back on your word instincts, because I think our instincts are very easily squashed, very early on.
Let me go back to polyamory and the science part of science will tell us if polyamory is a viable system for organizing a small unit of society. It used to be a marriage and a family, but now it can be variations on the family, polyamorous family. And indeed, the scientists have spoken, the psychologists have spoken, and the psychiatrists have spoken, not all, but several were quoted in some of these articles as explaining that this is a very good thing, and this gives people further options. And a woman who is in such a relationship wrote a book which is being promoted, although also criticized, in The Atlantic, interestingly enough.
You know, I didn't read The Atlantic article, but I saw the blurb, and they were saying this is elitists taking an advantage they have of marriage and saying, oh, well, we're beyond that. And that was Rob Henderson's Cadillac Values, that
that's
it,
right.
It hurts.
Exactly.
People follow, and the elites don't act on it.
And so if you treat the study of polyamory scientifically, and we explain why that is a complete waste, that is about as useful as studying electrical airplanes religiously. It's absurd. It makes no sense.
Can I say that in the book, it doesn't, as people who do believe in God and believe that God created human beings, it doesn't shock us when sometimes after many years, and sometimes things are coming out now, it comes out that there is a biological reason not to be polyamorous. For example, there are studies that are coming out that show that a woman's future children are affected by every sexual encounter she has before that baby's born. That doesn't shock us because it makes sense to us that God built us, that he know, you know. But the other way is, right? If the other way, if it turns out that physically there's a negative, that's problematic. If you've said no, the physical has nothing to do with.
So another area we differ from science. Some of the psychologists have said, yes, it's possible that you may be feeling some anxiety while your wife is out having a relationship with another man on Monday night, but you know, it'll bother you till Wednesday, and next time it'll bother you till Tuesday. You work on yourself, and you try and diminish your concerns, so you can eventually become completely laissez-faire and blasé and almost indifferent to whatever your wife is doing.
Or husband.
And we say, look, we don't deny that you can desensitize yourself. You can. But at that point, you are a seriously damaged human being. You're not an enhanced human being. You're a damaged human being. The bottom line is that part of masculinity and part of being a man is being, for lack of a better, jealous about your wife, meaning you are not comfortable with the notion of she being with somebody else. And that is correct. That's how it should be. It is designed as an exclusive relationship. Can you modify yourself? Not evolutionarily. You know, any dream of being able to breed a race that includes men who feel no jealousy about their women and about their wives, no, that's not going to happen.
You can take the sex drive. You could breed men who have no sex drive, which is something our society has been very effectively
doing. We don't quite know why, do we? I mean, we don't know if it's plastic in the water or is it... I'm not sure. I mean, by the way, one of the things that's been...
Yeah.
I've been reading quite a lot about this over the last couple of years, is the societal impact of hormonal birth control.
Right.
Amazing impact. So
there's
a lot of things. But
my guess is that there is a physical component like that of chemicals.
And there's also a spiritual.
And there's also a spiritual component, as the more we've been telling men, toxic masculinity, being a man is a negative. So you have to not be a man. And so we start with young boys and we say the more feminine you are, the better you are as a person. So I think we're reaching the end. Are we reaching the end of the podcast?
Well, it's just one more thing that I think has to be clarified here, and that is...
Before or after we send people to make sure to go to RabbiDanielAppin.com.
Well, let's do that.
Okay, go ahead.
Everybody should go to our website, RabbiDanielAppin.com, where, by the way, One of the things you can do is communicate with us there. You can message us. And one of the things I think we'd be interested to know is whether you would like more joint podcasts done with both of us.
I was going to say, because this is from experience, that some people are saying, I just want to listen to the rabbi. Why does he have to bring his wife on? And other people are saying, hey, I really like the interaction. And we actually have now over 400 TV shows that we did together. We used to host a co-host a TV show for many years on
TCT Network. Until quite recently, yes.
Until COVID. We co-hosted until COVID. We co-hosted for many years a TV show on the TCT Network, and we've been putting them up, and our happy warriors can have access to them. And it's already over 400 shows have been put up, and there is still another 100 or so to go. Where so, if you do like the interaction, you can find that.
I like the interaction.
I like the interaction too.
That's great. All right. So look, if somebody's trying to become an athlete. Mm-hmm. They'll tell it, focus, you know, she wants to become an Olympic hurdler. Think of nothing else. Focus only on that. Mm-hmm. The trainers will tell. That'll be the program. The University of Oregon used to have a very outstanding running team. I forget.
Isn't that when Nike was invented for that team?
And through the trainer of the running, I forget his name, Bill.
Sorry.
I forget his name, but yes, he had a lot to do with the founding of Nike, and a lot of great runners came out of there. And if you're interested in that, you discover that they were really discouraged from almost everything else. I mean, don't even worry about academics beyond having, you know, to keep up the average that'll let you stay in the program.
Which is pretty low.
Which was low when it comes to athletes. But, don't dream of dating seriously. Don't dream of worrying about your career. Focus on your athletics. When you reach a certain level, you go professional, you'll get all the money you need from endorsements. But right now, just focus. This is the message, and specialize, specialize, specialize. And so it's understandable, I think, that people would think that this is the right way. And so if you're in your 20s, then surely you should be focused and specialized on the money on the finance side, which is another word for career or profession or job, and leave everything aside. So what we, I think, persuasively demonstrate in the book is that, let's say you're interested in finding somebody to love, you know, you're interested in romance, you'll do better if you focus on health. And in
not
order,
focus if you also
include health. And that's sort of self-evident, right? Because your health is part of how a romantic partner evaluates you. So, okay, so I'm interested in love, which is another word for family and relationships and intimacy. Okay, that's my real priority, but wait a sec. You better also be thinking about health as well. You got to be doing that. And how about if you want to focus on health? Well, then you better also take into account finances.
Maybe stick with that one. Stick with that.
Well, I'd rather come back to it because what I'm trying to show, you see, I'm going
now.
I know
what you're trying to show. That's
I'm going now from, well, I disagree. This is one of those. I'm sorry. I mean, we have a very good marriage and we collaborate on it, but we don't, if we thought exactly the same way,
it wouldn't be much good.
So what I'm trying to say is that it's easy to see why if you're interested in romance, that you should also focus on health.
Right.
And if, okay, now I should also focus on health. But wait, that means I should also focus on finance.
Well, I was going to say, if you're interested in romance, you should also focus on friendship. Because
but wait, then you don't know where I'm going.
Okay, you go.
I'm going from romance to health to finance. And
you're
then
going like this. And I want to go like this.
Well, you'll have your turn to go like this very soon, I promise you. But let me try and clarify. What I'm trying to say is that I'm linking up the five in a certain line sequence.
Right.
And then I can link up the fives in a totally different line sequence.
Right.
In other words,
and this is why we tried to write the book for months and months and months, and it didn't go anywhere.
It was
not
hard.
A line sequence;
it was
it's a circle.
Well, yes, that's true. But the point is, everybody can see that romance has to do with health.
Is affected
by health. And can people see that health is affected by finance?
Yes.
Yeah, right?
Yes, you can afford better food. I told you this happened to me last week in the supermarket. I just had a yen for cookies. And I went to look at the, it's years since I've had a devil's dog. I grew up with them, but years since I had one. And I said to myself, well, everything, the price of everything is going skyrocketing. Every time I go to the supermarket, I'm gasping. And I thought, well, I'm not going to spend. And I decided, what am I not going to spend more on a box of devil dogs? And I said, okay, $4.99. And I was thinking, I know what I'm spending on eggs, and I know what I'm spending on carrots and potatoes and Brussels sprouts, and it's going up, up, up.
But there's no inflation in America to worry about. It's under control.
But I went, and the devil dogs are cheap. It costs more money to eat healthy than it does to eat garbage.
Yeah, that's the reality.
So, yes, your health is affected by finance.
Now, can you hear that if you're interested in finance, you should also be interested in friendship, because the more people with whom you are connected socially, the better you're going to do, so people can hear that. And can you hear that if you really want to be well-connected socially, it's easier if you have a family, because you have a spouse, you have somebody else. Even your children build social relationships. Mm-hmm. All right, so that's
faith.
One.
You got
that's
faith one, there, you left out faith.
And family depends to a large extent on faith. There are intangible aspects of building a family, and those things would fall under the faith. But in exactly the same way, we could say that if you want a great social life, you should focus also on finances.
Right.
Well, why? Why do my friends care how much money I have? Well, actually, everybody does.
And being able to afford to invite people over for a dinner even costs money.
Or even
money.
To go out. I remember,
or to go out.
Do you remember there was an episode of Friends many, many,
you
many years ago?
You watched more of those than I did.
Where there were six of them, I think, and they fell into two categories, those who had a few dollars and those who were struggling. And it became a social problem, all right, obviously. And so it is in each of these five things: finance, family, friendship, fitness, and faith. You can show how each one links to the next in a line, and then you can reorganize the line and it'll still work, and then reorganize the line again, it'll still work. And that brings us to where Susan was going to go, which is forget the line, put them on a circle, and connect all the points on the circle, and you get to exactly the same place.
That's all I was going to say.
Yeah, right. Okay. All right. So please go ahead and get the book. We are pledging
You're supposed to repeat the title.
Thank you. You're right. we're pledging our reputation on it because we
worked on it really hard for a long time.
No, but that's not the only thing. In other words,
we think it's great.
if we have you buy this book and then you say, you know what, this wasn't worth anything, then that's about the last time we'll ever be able to sell a book. So we're not that short-sighted.
We do have one or two places where we say, okay, if at this point you feel like throwing the book against the wall because what we're saying is so outrageous that you can't handle it. So we're not precluding that, but we would suggest you go pick it up after you've thrown it against the wall and keep on reading.
Yeah, no, there's definitely going to be parts that'll be infuriating to some people, not to everybody. But we recommend that you weigh them up very, very carefully before you reject them, because the book is a true overview of human operating system.
And it's hopefully a way to help all of us get over when there are bad ideas out there.
Yeah, which
to have something to bounce those ideas against and say, should I pay attention? There are great ideas out there also, but should I not pay attention? That you really want to have a core of yourself, of understanding how the world works. Really works.
That's right. The holistic you, your declaration of independence, it'll restore confidence that you do understand how the world really works. Not to say you won't consult experts, not to say you won't speak to specialists, of course. But the final decision is yours, because you are the CEO of your life. You are the president of your life, and nobody cares as much about your family, your finances, your friendships, your fitness, and your faith. Nobody cares as much about your 5F system as you do yourself. Any last words?
No.
That's it?
That's it.
You have nothing to say,
no.
Susan. Do you know how seldom I see you in that condition?
Yes.
I love doing shows with you.
Sometimes.
Okay, terrific.
Okay.
So thanks so much for being with us.
It was lovely spending time with you.
It was terrific to do this, and I hope we'll do it again, because we haven't even really begun to scratch the surface of the holistic you. There's really a lot there. So we'll talk about it again. But until next week, we want to wish you a fantastic week traveling upwards and onwards in your growth trajectory, in your family, your faith, your finances, your fitness, and your friendships. I'm Rabbi Daniel Lappin.
Susan Lappin.
God bless.
Stream and subscribe to more Blaze Media content at theblaze.com/podcasts.